lady. No, not Nantucket.
What does this say?
See, of the government channel, they are taping us tonight, and it will be aired at a later date. But I just wanted to also give some background on what SciFoc is. For those of you that may not know or may not be up to speed on everything. So SciFoc is the committee that was formed in the charter when we became a city. And there's kind of two main functions of SciFoc. One of them is making recommendations in consultation with the mayor to make recommendations for the strategic plan for the future of Framingham. And then our other kind of secondary role is also the mayor or the school committee or the city council, which are the three appointing authorities for SciFoc. They can give us special projects to look at the finances, to look at them and make recommendations about what we think about that. So we have been meeting since May, and what we have been really focusing on is coming up with recommendations for the strategic plan, because the mayor has to present that sometime in 2020 according to the charter. And so we are working on coming up with a list of suggestions and things of that nature. But we've been talking to elected officials. So I'm actually really looking forward to tonight and next on Monday, October 7th, at our next public hearing, because we get to talk to the public and to the residents of Framingham, because that's going to really influence, I think, what our recommendations are going to be, because I'm hopeful that this is where some of our best ideas are going to come from, because I don't think we can have a true strategic plan for Framingham without input from our residents. So that's why it was important for the entire committee for us to do this. So I will just let you know that we do kind of have some guidelines as far as speaking. Actually, before I do that, why don't I go down and introduce everyone first? That way you know who everyone is. So on the end, I'll start down here, we have David Kiklis. Next to him, we have James Culhane, Mary Kate Finney. My name is Robert Case, I'm the chair. We have Darlene Yumina, Jerry Desilets, Mike Gatlin, and Mahmoud Akhtar on the end down there. As I said, the three appointing authorities for the SciFoc committee are the mayor, the city council, and the school committee. And we all have staggered terms as well. So tonight's meeting is really for you guys to share your ideas and thoughts. We've kind of divided it into some categories to kind of keep us under certain topics. However, if there's something that comes up that doesn't nicely fit into a topic, just let us know, and we're going to have someone bring a microphone around to you to share your ideas. But the SciFoc committee adopted a public participation policy, so we're going to give everyone 3 minutes to speak, and then if we need some more time, then we can give you some more time. But we're going to try to stick to that 3-minute rule. And then if you have more than 3 minutes, you're welcome to, of course, always email us, contact us, give us anything in writing that you would like for us to consider as well. So I think to get started, why don't we talk about economic development for the city of Framingham? And I guess from my perspective, I would love to hear things you may see other communities comparative to Framingham that they're doing to draw business to Framingham. How are they adjusting for changes in the retail atmosphere? How are they, being able to bring in companies into the city? So what we've done so far is, like I said, we've talked to elected officials, and we've gotten some ideas there, but I would really be interested in just having a dialogue with those of you that are here to see what you think. So if you want to say something, feel free, raise your hand. We'll have a microphone come around, and committee members may want to ask you questions as well. But this is kind of an open-ended dialogue with you guys. So. Anyone? Sue? Yep. you'll just introduce yourself.
Super.
Thank you.
It's interesting when you look at our economic situation that it appears that downtown right now is more fully leased than Route 9 area. Now, we have some new development coming on Route 9, hotel, whatever, but how many restaurants have we seen close in the last year or two? Why is that? Don't see, other than Hot Chops, a lot of new businesses moving in. And it makes me wonder why. And yet we see Marlboro doing their whole Apex thing and expanding in a lot of ways. There was recently something I saw online about PR marketing that Marlboro was doing, reaching out to businesses. And I don't know if Framingham is doing anything like that, but it seemed like if we're not, we certainly should. Second thought I had is, does anybody know offhand whether Marlboro has a dual tax rate? And because what I was thinking is our dual tax rate one of the major reasons why Marlboro may be succeeding as they are and we're not? And if they have a dual tax rate, then it's obviously not that. And I understand the reasons why it's so difficult to change that, our dual tax rate, but is that a factor in why we are not seeing more development? And why does it seem like downtown is doing better? I mean, there's a lot of immigrant business downtown, but lots of people shop in, you know, the malls and Route 9, and yet it seems like it's just not thriving like it used to be. So I think we need some answers to those questions, not necessarily from you folks, but in general, to look at what we can do to attract more business and what are the reasons we're not getting.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Maureen Dunn. I guess I am an observer tonight. I guess I have to admit, if the format's different than I expected, I thought that we would probably have like a short update from an appropriate town department on what is the case is the economic development or the housing situation in town, whether it's the assessor, the categories, but someone from that who can give you a heads up. This is where we are now. Is that I speak a lot in the regional economist, I speak a lot in different communities, and one of the things that often comes up when I speak is that the people making decisions are unaware of baseline data. And I don't want anyone on speaking. We've been talking economic development for framing, you should have an idea of how many businesses are there in town. What's our total employment? What's our average wage? What's our biggest super sector?
Can you just pull the microphone just a little closer?
Do we want more?
Thank you.
I always caution communities, this going up, we don't tell you whether or not you want more jobs, but think of what you're wishing for.
Could I ask a question, Maureen?
Pardon?
Could I just ask this question? I'm sorry. You said that the other communities have split tax rates, but are they comparable to the discrepancy that we see in Framingham?
What I'm saying is, I think this is, you know, I'm not going to recite it off the top of my head. But I think that's what he's saying. Just look it up. In last year's conference book, I highly recommend that everyone who's a decision maker in Framingham show up at the Murray Conference.
Okay.
But it's showing it between 30 and 35 over Framingham and Hudson. Interestingly enough, Marlborough is around 25. This is the 2019 book from the conference. And then the other ones in Sudbury is about, looks like 24 or 25. And then the others are just flat. A lot of the others are more residential communities in this region. Is this someone we replace? That answers your question. Yeah. But I think when we look at Framingham, if I look as a resident, I served in the 90s trying to get in the debacle, which was the total collapse in the 1986-93 recession. Framingham lost 25% of its jobs. Okay. And then it was on the EDIC following that when we worked to get DESA and Metro Microsystems staples here. But one of the reasons these firms wanted to be able to begin on coming to Framingham was the resident workforce was highly educated. They saw a future here. Okay. Many of their employees lived here. So I think when we begin to think, I think if we think of what types of businesses we want to attract here, which ones, I just actually looked up, I can just tell you, the average wage here is about $79,000 for a job in Framingham, but a good number of the super sectors, you know, some of them are paying over $100,000 per job. Okay, and this is jobs including payroll, it's including wages, salaries, fringe benefits, and jobs. But you want to make sure those employees who are choosing to work here are also choosing to live here. And I think when you're hiring employees who are making that kind of money, they don't necessarily want to be in a one-bedroom apartment. And I think you have to think, who do we want to live here? Do we have housing for the people we want to live here? Service the very firms that are located here. This is just some food for thought. But I think it would be due diligence to maybe have municipal apartments. Would you, well, what is the idea? You know, what is the numbers? Where are we now? Where? Before we choose where to go, how does that compare to where we are already? Just some thoughts.
Thank you.
Jerry Woodfield, District 1. Economic development is a single faceted situation, multifaceted.
Could you speak directly into the mic?
Or could be successful in our community, some of which is we've touched on. In other cities that I've lived, Worcester, for example, you know they're moving the Pawtucket Riverside to Worcester. And the reason they were able to do that so successfully is they have a quasi-government entity. They sometimes name it Bancorp. And it's a fusion of private and government funds together with the aim of economic development in certain strategic areas that are undeveloped, that are blighted, are ongoing in a way that's prosperous for the community. And I don't see that happening in Framingham. So that's a big void. As far as the tax rate, Framingham on the commercial industrial piece has been extremely high. We were in the top 5 or 6 rates per thousand for the business sector. And that was a distraction. But things like location, location, location have been the hallmark to a certain extent for businesses in Framingham. But then come some other issues. The other issues, there's train on retail establishments, which we rely on extensively in Framingham. By internet sales. And brick and mortar isn't holding up and showing that front growth rate, as you know, the skyrocketing residential market. So in that regards, the tax load is shifted towards residential. And then you get into one of your other categories, which is affordability. Somehow, all these things need to be paid for by somebody. And the shift is going towards the residents. And none of that is helping. But those are all just pieces. And then if you put in pieces like, if you were running a company and you were planning to move into an area and you had a good background team studying the various areas, you would look at criteria like, for instance, this is a simple one, traffic, ease of getting around, mobility, and desire for people who want to live and work here. So there's so many pieces to economic development. You've got to capture it all as it relates to one another. It's all interwoven. And you have other criteria you're going to be talking about coming up. And then somehow you have to develop something that people can grasp onto and how to tackle these things. And I'm interested in when you get to affordability, because I believe affordability is the key to a lot of things for Brandon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Karen Dempsey, and I wanted to kind of, Sue stole some of what I was going to say, but last night, I think it was last night, I was watching TV and I saw a commercial from EDIC from Marlboro, and I was like, wow, I knew they already had a lot to offer, and I thought that was a great idea, just like Sue had said about doing some, you know, on the minimal side, just doing some more PR to let people know what Framingham has to offer. And then going along with that, though, some concern as a parent, and I've spoken to other parents about not really offering a lot of stuff for children. And now we have the Apex, which is in Marlboro, but it would be nice, again, I know we'd have to find places, enough space, but something that had more for parents or children, you know, when they get older than the bouncy houses and things like that. So I know there was a project that was being looked at a couple of years ago, but that didn't go through. There was a sky jump place or something like that. I think it was actually a bowling place, or it might have been both, but I was so excited as my kids get older, just for them to be able to, you know, and then I've spoken with other parents and they have the same concerns that we have to go to Marlboro, we'll go to other places as well. So, you know, again, I want that to be looked at for parents, for children, for gathering places for kids, places that might be safe for them to be able to go, where we can drop them off, or whatever it might be. But as Jerry said, there's so much interwoven here. And part of it also, I think, when we talk about economic development, transportation. So I know the MWRTA has done a lot, and I think that would be another way to be able to get people, you know, we're trying to have people think about using vehicles less, and for kids that, you know, want to go wherever, you know, developing more of a transportation system, you know, putting that on the short-term plan to look into that more and offer more options for transportation. So, but there's a lot of potential that I see the Framingham could do, is doing, needs to do, will do. So, but and again, talking about when we get to housing, but obviously affordability and accessibility because of the rates, you know, hoping that my children will want to stay here and be able to afford to live here. So it's nice to see all these new construction things happening, all the new housing, and that's wonderful. But then the concern is we're having so much housing, I think it seems more than we have businesses, and that's then obviously, as we're seeing, going to create an issue for schools. So, you know, we have to think of that, though this is great, and the market, you know, that's, you know, we don't know what's going to happen there eventually, but we need to also think about a long-term plan for educating all the students, that though they may start out here as a couple with no children or whatever it might be, they will have children. You know, right now, no, you know, but in a couple of years, you know, so that's a real huge concern of mine when we see that increase happen and how do we educate where I already have some issues presently. So just thinking of things like that, and this is so much more fun. Thank you for holding this.
Thank you. Anybody else? Does anyone on the committee have any questions or want to make any comments or anything?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Desolet.
Yeah, thanks. Maureen, I was wondering through the chair if it might make sense for us, meaning the SIFOC, to hear from Merck at some point about an overview of the work you've been doing for the last, I won't say how many years, Maureen. So I think it would be instructive and helpful to members of the committee, not only just Metro West, obviously, but Framingham is clearly a big part of your focus at Merck. And if you're willing to do that, would you be willing to do some sort of an overarching presentation? I understand that those things aren't easy to put together. You may already have one put together. Do you have a PowerPoint? But in any case, if you'd be willing to entertain that, I would think, Mr. Chairman, the committee might be willing to entertain that as well. That's a good question. He's asking you, what is Merck?
Hi, Maureen Dunham. In my other life, I have many lives. I'm a professor emeritus at Framingham State. I was one of the co-founders of Merck in 1991 as the Metro West Economic Research Center. We've been in business since then, so I was just actually doing the math. I think it's our 28th year, something like that. And we have cover regional reports about 1/8 of the state, okay, in terms of South Shore, Greater Metro West 495, Blackstone Valley, down 495 further, et cetera. Okay. And we provide reports like this. This is the annual conference book. We do a conference for Metro West because it's our home region. And our database goes back to 1980 for most of our regions. And I would have to talk to the co-directors to find out, how feasible this is. If you're not, we could probably use some of the slides from the May conference. I am employment, I do employment, but we do municipal revenue, K-12, housing, population. Do it in my sleep, your cost of living, unemployment. Right now, I can tell you, all Metro West has extremely low unemployment. So we're dealing with basically a full economy at the top of our fourth expansion since 1980. We've survived four recessions. We're probably leveling out, but we have not come to consensus on that to say it out. But part of the recent driver has been Framingham. That's why I just looked in the, that's why I think there's a lot that can be done. I agree in my town meeting with the previous speaker, excuse me. I agree with a lot of her comments. About Marlboro, there are lots of things we can do better. The downtown is turning into a success story with a lot of effort. My gavel has been part of that. But I also think we have to look at the community as a whole. Karen pointed out a great thing. Each time you touch something, it rolls into other areas. It rolls into education, it rolls into municipal, it rolls into, we have districts with no parks. District 4 has no parks, zero parks. So there's whole parts of town that are kind of left behind and now so trying to catch up with them. But arching over this, we're in one of the leading edge economies for the country, Greater Metro West. Framingham is the biggest community in that, okay? And it's important to keep that. Our payroll for firms was in 2017, almost $4 billion. That's from this community that flows into the larger region. So I just wanted to, I think we have 2,500 different firms, but I think this gets lost. And that's why I just felt to speak when I realized there was no. It's very important, not just in what Merck can provide, to have people coming to you. What has been the trend in Cess Valley? What has been the trend in education of various suburbs, superintendent should say, these are the places I'm concerned. Because if you're developing a strategic plan, and I worked on you have got to know where you are, but based on data. I can't tell you how many times I've had someone raise their hand when I speak. That's not true. I know. I have seen and you can see. And it's like, you know, because you can't answer it in a public thing. And I didn't want to imply any, I just realized what I was saying earlier. But I think you have to decide what's the match for your community? Where do you want to be 10 years from now in jobs? I was just looking at the jobs. We have a big professional scientific and technical one. We have a restaurant piece, all these pieces. But you want to keep the train moving. But you don't want to create a situation like Karen was talking, where your schools are overflowing, you don't have enough public recreation, and you're unraveling the good picture. Because the firms and the people who work there will not want, you want them to choose to live here. I am a native of Waltham, Massachusetts. We moved back here from California. My husband took a job at Natick Labs. And we wanted to live in Framingham. We wanted to live between Natick Labs and Framingham State. And, you know, so that the shortest possible commute. But you want that, and everyone was very similar. It was a dual income career couples with kids in tow, you know, the whole package. And that's what fed the success of Framingham. So I just want, you know, every job has, you know, if you're retired, you love the little part-time jobs and all this. But you don't want to have your households working 4 and 5 low-wage jobs without benefits, okay? When you can create jobs that give you benefits and recruit employers who want to be here for all the reasons they have in the past and will in the future.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask you, EDIC paid for exactly that kind of survey through Merck a couple of years ago. I wonder if we might be able to avail ourselves of that.
Okay. I think that's
I hesitate getting too much into making policy. I think we need to be careful about what we're doing. I think that's a little outside of our charge to an extent. I'm concerned about getting too much into making policy. That's been something that we've been trying to be very cautious about as a group. But nonetheless, in terms of informing ourselves, perhaps the study that we commissioned through Merck at EDIC a couple of years ago would be informative.
I agree. I think that that would be, well, as Maureen said, a good start to have a baseline of information. And I think that's what we've all been looking for, is that baseline of where to start. And kind of the information we've been collecting so far has been, where are we now and where do things go from here? So, yes?
I'm Grace O'Donnell. I'm a resident in District 5, Precinct 2 now. I'm also Director of Elder Services, so I'm here both as a resident and as an employee of the city. I had expected that we would hear more from you first, understanding what you have come, what conclusions you have reached, or ideas that you have since you've been meeting for 5 months, and I thought it might be then more of a dialogue from that.
Well, I mean, I think we can share some of the things that we've been kind of talking about so far as, and, you know, we have our kind of list and things that we've been talking about with our elected officials and things like that. But, you know, we've been talking about different ways to attract business to Framingham. What's important? What are the key points that we have to do? We've been talking about, you know, how do we look into downtown issues of, you know, loitering, violence, the opioid addiction, things of that nature. How is that affecting our downtown area, and what are ways that we could do to work on that? We've also had a recommendation for some better signage in the city, that there's a lot of people, even people that have lived here for a number of years. We know that there's a park somewhere over in that section of the city, but, and it's also just a thing to kind of build, I think, morale a little bit more with people that come into the city. If they're coming from outside and they cross the city line, where do they go to see our fabulous skate park? Where, you know, and just to kind of just have some better signs. And so that's kind of part of it too, that we've been talked about. And then we briefly touched upon a shift that some people have maybe seen in retail, and obviously I think Mark would be able to probably give us some better data on that. But, you know, where stores are going from these large box stores down to smaller size stores, and how does Framingham have to cope with that? What things do we need to look at when they're more online retail things and they're having a small brick and mortar store? How does that affect the availability of our retail space in town? And is that, how do we adjust for that? Is there anybody else?
Can I speak?
Yes, Darlene.
Sure. I think it's important to note, first of all, I'm sure I can speak that all the issues you talked about tonight are very, very important to me, and they're really important to everybody up here, and we all feel very similar. What we've been doing the past 5 months to answer is this is an information gathering stage for us, and unfortunately, we weren't given a strong framework on what this group is really here to do. So because of that, we're creating it ourselves and we're gathering knowledge. So we've met with the council, many different members, and we've had our ideas, and it's important for us to hear from the community on what's really important to you, because although we have our ideas, we want to make sure that they're not just our ideas that are being reflected. And so if we hear from 50 people that signage is important, that's going to be high on our list, because we don't want to move our agenda, we want to move your agenda. So for us, over the past few months, it's literally been talking to counselors, getting the information, talking to the mayor's office, discussing with ourselves, and hearing from you guys is really kind of the pinnacle of this. And I thank you so much for everybody that did come out tonight. I wish the attendance was a little bit greater. Maybe on the 7th we can rely on that too. But I kind of just wanted to get the message out that we don't have all the answers. We wish we did. And we're here to, and we have data too that we've been looking at as well. But we're really here to collect concerns and then funnel those into the strategic plan that the mayor is tasked with completing. Is that helpful?
There.
Where's the microphone? Can Karen ask a question? Okay.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Sure. My name is John Silica, District 2.
Yep.
So this is actually something that's near and dear to my heart. I'm sorry I'm late. Why I am involved in it is that I was working with the Friends of Saxonville with the Athenaeum and seeing what we could do with the building. And one of my questions was, well, what's the plan for Saxonville and Framingham going forward? So, you know, 20 years from now, what does Framingham look like? You know, so we can fit into that model. And I haven't been able to find a lot of answers for that. So one of the things I'm looking for specifically is a vision, a plan for what we want Framingham to be in the future. Now, some of my questions for you guys is that I came across the Town of Framingham Master Plan Part 2, and it had very detailed items for each district as to what they wanted to accomplish. Are you guys working off of that as a document, a starting document?
I can. Thank you so much for the question. I think that's, Sean, that's a good point. That is the master plan that was put together by the planning board. That's what they do. So this wider strategic long-term plan would take that into an account, but it also not only talks about open space and building usage, but about arts and culture, traffic and transportation. Other communities have been doing this. Cambridge, Boston are bigger examples, but other places do that as a way to, what is it as a community that we want our community to be in 10 years? And that's not just buildings. We're more than buildings. So that's the master plan with which I'm assuming, I can't speak for the mayor and I can't speak for her office, but that will be part of that plan.
So the one I also found, because I know that they started the economic Framingham Village Centers, Saxonville and Nonscott had Economic Development Action Plan, and it looked at other items besides just buildings, like, because I know, just from reading, one of the things that stuck out to me was that parking cars on lawns was an issue for District 9, and, you know, like, that was okay, that's not, you know. So there were some items in there that I think addressed maybe holistic points of what things we need to accomplish as a city now.
right.
town of Cuyahoga City. So I just found them very useful, but I would like to see something like that come out of this group, just a document that says, you know, 20 years from now, we want Framingham to be this, based on this, this, and this. We're going to get there by doing this. So signs may be important now, but, you know, after you solve that, you know, that's probably hopefully a quick fix. What's next? What's, you know, what are we going to make Framingham into in 20 years from now? Is it going to be very urban? Is it going to be a mix? Because that's what I can't find.
If you don't mind,
I
agree 100%, and I think my fellow members agree with that as well, that this wants to be, we want, and this is why we're holding these hearings. You know, I'm hoping for October 7th that we also have a, continue to have a robust conversation, because we cannot do this plan without people's input, from the neighborhoods, from all of demographics. And, you know, we are, one of the things, we're going to compile the information, and we are going to make a report that we are going to submit to the mayor and to the city council and the school committee based on these conversations. And this is just the beginning. I would hope that we will have more of these conversations throughout the year and as the mayor is putting together her strategic plan. We have to do something next year because it is required by the charter. This is a first step in getting us there. But thank you so much for your concerns. Those are all correct.
I will add that, as I've said since I was appointed the chair and to the SciThought committee, that I very much see that this strategic plan is a little bit of a living document, because, you know, some of us have 3-year terms, 2-year terms, and there's continuous work and refinement that needs to be done. So I agree with some of the points that you made, and I think that some of those things will get there. But we are under a little bit of a time constraint, I think, just because of the requirements of the charter right now. You know, I agree with what Mary Kate said. I think it's important that we get started. And as long as we get started, then hopefully we can work and refine some of those things as time goes on. At least that's my desire for the committee to do and kind of refine some of those things and look more in. And deeper into the weeds a little bit when we have the opportunity to do so. Was there Mr. Destin?
Mr. Chairman, yes, thank you. So the challenge for our committee is we're an advisory committee. We have no executive authority and we have no staff. So we're reliant upon the City of Framingham's professional staff, members of the City Council, members of the School Committee, and the public at large, and various private nonprofit and other organizations in the community to help educate us about what their thinking is in terms of what the City of Framingham should look like 10 years down the road. So, as you know, the City of Framingham is brand new, and so we're working with city government and with the mayor's office and her staff to begin to look at, and I think what's very important is what Maureen raised, we need to have baseline information. What is the baseline information upon which we build the foundation for our plan? We, as this group of 9 volunteers, without particular expertise, have to rely upon people who have that expertise and who have that information and can present us with a baseline, so that at some point the mayor and her office, the City of Framingham, will come forward with probably a draft, which we would look at and say, okay, so based on the input we've had from all of the entities that have appointed us and the public at large, this is our advice to the City Council, this is our advice to the mayor, this is our advice to the school department as to how we should together collectively go forward. And it's a little bit slow going, partly because we are a brand new entity, meaning the City of Framingham. If you think of the old town of Framingham, this committee is similar in many ways to the Finance Committee, which was an oversight and advisory committee to town meeting. Actually, when I was town moderator, the Finance Committee actually had real authority. That changed over time, and that probably makes sense. But this is an advisory board, but I think it's important that we serve as the eyes and ears of those 3 entities I mentioned, and also the public at large, to bring our collective, I would call, wisdom and information to bear on decisions we're going to make going down the road. We're not going to be the prime decision makers, but we're in a position to be able to help, I think, persuade on some issues and provide guidance and advice on others. And so It's a little bit slow going, and I get people's frustration about when you come, you want to hear, what have we got up our sleeve? Do we have a particular plan? How concrete is the stuff that you're looking at so far? It's slow going, but we're getting there and gathering the information and establishing that baseline again, as Maureen talks about, is critically important to us. And we're getting to a place where that's beginning to happen. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Karen?
Oh. Okay. Yeah, I'd like to ask a question. So I know you're having today's public hearing and you'll have October 7th as well. Then are you guys also reaching out like to the individual chair members or the committees, the boards, either for them to come before you or some of you or all of you to go before them or for their... So in other words, what I'm getting at is I'm not sure how many committees and boards and commissions, but, you know, instead of, for you guys, I would think you'd be asking them maybe to send you something or meet with you guys, or maybe you're going to be doing that. I don't know if that's something that I missed, but, you know, as the chair of the Disability Commission, we obviously know what we're looking for, where we'd like to see what we need for the next 10 years. And to go along with what Mary Kate said, the open space plan, we're also hopefully soon updating the ADA plan, which has not been updated since 2005. That's when it was done. So it has not been updated for 14 years. So like for an example for us, that's number one priority to update that. And like you had said about your document you'll be working on, it is a living document. It will never end. It will keep on going. And what our goal is for that is to have it updated. And like you as well, your committee, we're an advisory commission. We don't have staff. So we are working with the department heads and the access and compliance inspector to get that to happen. So when you're just, like as you guys know, we're a 7-member board. It's difficult, so, you know, but I want to recommend, if you guys haven't thought of that, you know, maybe meet or ask the chairs to meet with you guys or send something to you, like 5 things they want to, what they're working on or whatever it might be, or you don't want to ask for too many, because somehow incorporate that all into what you are working on. I don't know, does that make sense? Because the open space plan is another thing that is currently being worked on as well. Mm-hmm. So just a thought, a recommendation.
No, I appreciate that. I think that's definitely something that we can, as a committee, continue to talk about, because we know we haven't talked to everyone, we haven't seen everyone, and that's what we're trying to get our hands around within the time frame that we have to do it. So that's a very good point, and I appreciate you making that. Mr. Bloomfield.
Yes, thank you again. Just by way of information for folks that are listening and watching, I recall by way of the chat, we have certain deliverables that SIPARC is to provide to, and not necessarily understanding where you're getting your information, you still have deliverables by a certain due date, which might be a bind. And you might have to come in and say, this is incomplete, but this is where it is. And you might not be able to get all the input you want in a fashion that you'd like with substantiated data, but you should still, and I believe you will, come forward and say, based on your individual's awareness of the community you live in, what our circumstance is today, and what in general you need to make sure we can improve on those things going forward in a broad brush kind of way. And I'm not sure, but I would like to think that whereas it's part of the title of the advisory board, initiatives. Now, I know we're supposed to get school committee initiatives, mayoral initiatives, and city council initiatives, but are you bringing or creating your own initiatives based on your own experience living in this community as to what you as individuals would like to have as things going forward, that projects can be developed around, finances made available, and then to oversee the completion of those initiatives? Have you got to that point yet? we're still kind of way back in the genesis of all this stuff. Will there be anything significant provided in your early deliverables by way of chatter deadlines?
I can say that I think each one of us has lots of different experience in several different areas of the city and history with Framingham. And we've all been bringing ideas and our own ideas and our own thoughts to the table, to every single meeting, which is why I think this is such a great group to be a part of, because of the wide breadth of experience that we have here. So to answer your question, yes, we are bringing our own ideas and our own initiatives to this as well, because I think that that's the way this committee is set up. But it's also important for us to take what our ideas, base it off the baseline information, and get feedback from the public about, because it's, we, you know, Framingham is more than just the nine of us, but it's the nine of us that have been given the ability to advise our leaders and hopefully kind of guide them with the wants and needs of the residents in town. So I think that that's important. And that's kind of the way we've been approaching things. So,
just as a follow up to that, if you could share, if you have a way of sensing the urgency of the criteria that you're looking at and other criteria that affect the quality of life of the people in Framingham, do you have any sense of urgency that you could be making as part of your early report? To say this could be a watershed moment for this community, and we only have this amount of time to begin to tackle and find solutions to these major problems before it becomes a point of no return, that we're at critical mass, and we only have so much time. I don't want to put it in terms of the climate crisis, where they tell us we have 10 years, but there's a finite amount of time that's available tackle these problems. We might have already gone past the point of no return. People are leaving Framingham because of some of these criteria and combinations of these criteria. And the fact that we are at a point where we don't have any solutions or any answers or any positive things going forward, people are really questioning the functioning of our government at this point. And kind of turning a blind eye. And that's the last thing you need, because you really need everybody in the community to get behind something. And the only people that could possibly offer something, I believe, is SIPOC, because that is your roadmap going forward. People can see how they fit and what it is you're projecting and why you're projecting and the urgency and so on and so forth. So I'm hoping, and I might be asking or hoping too much, that that's their something, and it's not in the too distant.
Thank you. Should we move on to, I mean, I know we've, Grace, go ahead.
If I could just follow up on Karen's suggestion, mm-hmm. meeting with the various commissions and boards, this is a shame that there are so few people here mm-hmm. giving their input. Clearly you were ready for a crowd, and I know that's what you were hoping for. So if this is not what drew people, if we can try some other approaches, mm-hmm. I don't know if there was any consideration to doing any sort of online survey. I know the Community and Economic Development did a fairly extensive one where they raised various questions and asked people to respond to those. I don't know if there's any consideration of that. But clearly, either people didn't get the word or didn't have the time to come at this hour. I'm sure there are people who would want their wishes known, and I think the boards and commissions, as Karen recommended, would be a good place to start, and they may mm-hmm. even be able to spread the word to their constituents. We may be able to host something at the Callahan Center, for instance. Maybe you could do something at the library. Sometimes I think some people are a little intimidated about the idea of coming to the maybe town city hall, so maybe doing more intimate sort of conversations might get more people to come and give their input.
Thank
you.
Hi. I'm Hi. Karen Marvolis. Sorry I got here late.
No problem.
I'm not sure what I missed. But I did want to, you know, I don't imagine Grace had mentioned something, but I do want to be sure that you take into consideration the of our community. It's not just Framingham that's aging, our entire country is aging. And the fact that there will be a much higher percentage of older adults in our community 10 years from today than the average age of the town will be. The city will be aging. And I think that plays into a number of aspects, including housing, making sure that we have accessibility and affordability, and also other areas, just to make sure that we have supports in our community, such as transportation. I know we do pretty good, we do well with transportation, and to just be cognizant of where the gaps are. But I think if we're talking about a 10-year plan for Framingham, we can't forget that our community is aging, and that we need to plan ahead. We do have an age-friendly Framingham group. Grace might have mentioned it, that we've done a little bit of groundwork and reaching out to the community to try to get some input. So it may be helpful for you to approach the age-friendly Framingham group just to get some of our baseline information about what we found in terms of surveys of older adults in this community. So just hoping they can be cognizant of that as well.
Thank you.
Also, the Metro West Health Foundation just recently issued their report on the health of the Metro West region. That may be another catalyst for some other business opportunities, addressing some of the health issues that were specifically highlighted in Framingham. So, another possibility. So, there are a number of other groups and organizations out there that have compiled information. So, I'd encourage you to reach out. And if you don't know who those groups are, ask any one of us or go to the commissions as a suggestion.
Great. Thank you.
Can I just ask one more question?
Sure.
Timeline-wise, are you guys looking out 10 years? Is that your goal? I might have missed it.
Well, yeah, that's what the charter says. So we're kind of looking at that, but, well, I mean, we are. It's a 10-year plan that the mayor's office has to come up with. So our job is just to advise her, come up with our report to say these are the things we think are important. And then she will take that under advisement and then put that as she sees fit into a strategic plan. Our plan is we are required to give an annual report.
So this group started in May, so is your report due next May or April?
That's something that we're still discussing. So as far as timeline, the way the charter was written, there's not a lot. I think as Darlene mentioned, the framework there's a somewhat of a framework, but there's some movement in there, I think, maybe a little bit. So we make it our own, we come to our decisions as a committee, and then we'll decide. But we are trying to look and to try to work with the mayor's office, finding a timeline of where they are, because she is required to deliver that strategic plan sometime in 2020. So
I just want to be clear, we are not writing the strategic plan.
Right.
The mayor's office is running this review plan. Our job as advisors is to say we've listened to all the different constituencies that we were able to. These are concerns that they have raised, they've echoed, we agree, and these elements need to be addressed in the plan. And again, it's pretty loose in the charter as to what we actually are supposed to do and deliver. So we're even though we've been meeting for months, and we've been doing it solid every 2 weeks, we're still very much in the forming and storming phases of this as an entity. I think as we said, we have people that have been part of the town government before. We've had school committee members, city council members, interested parties that have come. At this point, we're listening. We're trying to understand where our limits of authority and advisement are, and really just being sponges at this point. With the plan of being able to put together with input like tonight from tonight a coherent, these are concerns that are being raised in the community. We would like to see these addressed in the strategic plan. And personally, I also am really hoping that it's not just a plan that we write one time and put it on the shelf, that it becomes a living, breathing document that helps, you know, that will change as Framingham changes, right? I've done a lot of strategic planning at work, and the ones that get shelved don't get anywhere. So.
I should also add that the town's about $500 million in annual revenues across all those departments, so it's not insignificant size function that has to be addressed. And sometimes that gets lost, just how big the town actually is. And the other side is that, you know, part of the cycle, the effort is the finance side of that. And we have to recognize that ultimately it's a guns and butter question. We have limited resources. We can just say where we think these areas need to be addressed and the policy should be this. But ultimately the town is going to make the decision where it puts the dollars.
Mr.
One of the other things I was thinking, since it is a 10-year plan, you mentioned the terms, how do you ensure consistency over those 10 years so that, you know, you guys are serving your term now, but the next round doesn't come up with a completely new set of objectives for, since it is a living, breathing document, which is good, but there could be challenges with that too, because we keep changing directions and you don't end up having a 10-year plan, you just have a very reactionary plan to the current situation where you're just dealing with the most current problem and then moving on to the next most current problem. So to me, a strategic plan looks beyond that. So do you guys have something in place that would ensure that, say, 10 years from now, they're sticking with your vision?
Well, I think that's why the mayor is the one that's actually charged with writing the strategic plan. As we said, we're just strictly advisory. And I think that those advisors can change over time. And then it's up to the leaders of the elected leaders, the city council, the school committee, and the mayor's office to decide what of that advice are they going to take. You would think that they would be more open to it since they were the ones that appointed this body. But I think that that's a very important distinction to make, that, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing to have different viewpoints and different advice, but the ultimate responsibility is for the mayor's office to do this, and because, as the charter says, we are doing this in consultation, or the mayor is writing it in consultation with us as a committee. So it's something that I think that and I think some of that responsibility is the through line of the committee. That's up to the elected leaders that we put into power over our city government. Mr. Dessler.
Yeah, I think also on the issue of continuity, the charter, because it set these terms up as staggered terms, foresaw that they wouldn't want one election to see the whole committee swept away and replaced by somebody or a group with perhaps a completely different perspective. So staggered terms are helpful. Over time, what you see in committees like this, and this committee will go on forever, maybe. None of us will, but the committee might. So some people on the committee may develop, some individual members may develop their own expertise, so that there might be someone on the committee who serves 5 or 10 years on the committee who's an expert on school building authorities or something. There could be another one who's got expertise in the environment. So I've seen that happen with committees over the course of time here in Framingham, whether it was the Finance Committee or other committees that were established. And so all of this brings to bear on, and I do agree with the chair that, you know, the impetus is with the mayor in terms of putting it all together, but we are, again, the eyes and ears of the community, of the schools, of the city council, and of the mayor herself to hear and help inform this document. That's why it's called a living document. It should change. On emergent issues, which all of you have raised, for example, if the mayor's master plan came out and didn't include anything on traffic, didn't include anything on the growth of apartments, didn't include anything on the aging population, we would probably stop and think maybe these are things that need to be, our advice to them would be, you need to make sure that you're looking at these issues in terms of your 10-year plan. So I think that's how, without, you know, banging the gavel and ordering things happen, because we don't have that executive authority, we advise and share the information that we've gathered from everybody with the executive branch.
So I, I will just bring it up. Some people have talked about housing here in Framingham. We've kind of touched upon it a little bit, but what do people think of our current housing stock? Do we have the right housing? Do we not? Do we have, you know, it's kind of where it goes from there. Yes.
That are located particularly in centers of the town where there's also some commercial. So in other words, places where people can go by walking to get to a market. It might not be a full grocery store because there's other economics about that, but to at least be able to get certain needs met in terms of a pharmacy or to get errands done. And transportation does help with that too. But a lot of our multifamily is on Route 9, which is not particularly easy for older adults or people with disabilities to negotiate and get into the community without a car. So I think when we think about multifamily, part of what I'm hoping is that we look at actual housing that will be accessible to people.
Thank you.
You might have heard me say this here or there. Large apartment complexes we have in abundance. And that the intent was to have mixed use apartment houses, like what we were talking about on Concord Street. And the developers say, no, we can't do that. We have to create enough revenue to meet our expenses. By the way, there's not a lot of need for mixed use. So you have that argument. And then at the same time, they want to have tax incentives to help them to come into the community and build something to begin with. And then what you get to is a point where if you have an abundance of them, it creates other problems. So you're solving a housing problem at the expense of so many other problems. For instance, the traffic gridlock downtown is abysmal. And you're talking about more trains with more commuters coming in from as far away as Springfield. That won't work because all you're doing is creating a problem in Framingham. We're helping to solve the transportation problem on a statewide basis, but we're not getting the return from the state government all the things that it's causing. So if you have this housing, it's illegal to ban families from moving into apartment houses. And people will move in, and sometimes these apartment houses become overcrowded because the big landlords, aren't watching how many people are moving in and sleeping in individual apartment units on a nightly basis. We also have illegal boarding houses. And what it comes up to is it creates a worse condition, not only downtown, but throughout the entire city, traffic. And one of the biggest complaints most people have, besides taxes, obviously, is traffic. And so you have that piece, and then you have our kids sitting in yellow school buses in gridlock traffic, and not getting to school on time, which causes a whole bunch of other problems. And when they do get to school on time, we don't have enough quality sufficient classrooms to meet our current needs. And you're going to hear about that probably tomorrow night, the 24th of September, right in this room, when they come forward and they present the municipal buildings and school buildings projections. And you're going to find out that we can't afford to build the building space to match the potential growth of the X amount of number of kids that potentially can live in these apartments that we're going to have to educate, because that's a lot too. We have to educate every child that comes to our door. So people can talk about housing, and people have different feelings about housing. And for me, personally, we have an abundance of housing. We've exceeded the 10% low-income housing of all our housing stock, and we're one of only a few in all of Metro West that has met that metric. So we are doing morally and ethically what we're supposed to be doing, to have diversity in economic structure. But we can't go on and on and on as other types of planners want us to do, which is build a lot of apartment houses along the rail system without understanding what it's doing to the people that live in those neighborhoods that aren't utilizing the train on a daily basis to be commuters into Boston or back the other way to Worcester and then Springfield. I know I'm rambling a little bit, but I'm trying to make a point here that there are higher priority issues and there are lower priority issues. And if you're going to have to focus some of your attention, you should put more of your attention on those elements of daily life that may be nice, but are causing more problems than we have the capability of solving, which gets you into the entire ways and means. How are we going to pay for this in the future, which gets you into affordability, and so on and so forth. So there's an interwoven overlap of this, that, and the other thing. And I know we're not at affordability, but I see affordability as the number one criteria that affects all the people, both young and old, both the middle-aged and older people. If they can't afford to live here, then nothing else matters. You can talk about all these other things. You can develop the greatest plan for 10 years out. But if people can't afford that, and nobody tests or measures affordability as to what is a reasonable amount of money that people should have to pay to live in a community, then you get a double-edged sword where you're not going to go anywhere because it just won't happen. And I want everybody to be able to feel like it's going to happen, but it's not going to happen unless you can put some prioritization to what the elements are of good quality of life for a friend of mine would be. And I know I said a lot, so I'll stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Maureen?
Oh.
Okay. Can we pass the microphone down to her? Oh.
Shouldn't we be deciding this?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry. Yeah, and I just wanted to echo both what the previous speakers have said. Affordability, housing, affordability, accessibility is huge. And I think if you talk to a lot of the groups, you're going to find that is number one. Number one regarding housing, everything that Jerry just mentioned as well. But affordability, because if you can't afford it, then you're not going to stay here. So, and then the other thing I wanted to follow up with what you had said as well, that people that where they're currently living, and I'm sure everybody's heard of this, but it's called aging in place. So something to think about that for down the road, because I was actually just going through statistics about the average lifespan. A friend of mine were comparing, and I believe now it's, for Americans, it's now 79. It had been, I believe, 65, and now it's 79. I think that was back maybe in the beginning of 2000. And don't quote me 100%, but it's gone up quite a bit. So the life expectancy is 79.
For men?
Oh, okay. So for women, 85. And for men, it's 79, and women, it's 85. Well, thank you. So again, that's something, and again, speaking in my role as the chair of the Disability Commission, we talk about this a lot. And you know, obviously, I'm in a wheelchair, but it's more than talking about people that might be in wheelchairs. It's people that are on crutches, canes, walkers. Mm-hmm. And then everybody's, whether temporary disability or as they get older, are going to need something. And there's lots of ways to think outside the box. So, you know, another thing, and I just talked about somebody else about this, chairlifts for people that want to stay in their current housing. So things like that. And then, of course, but getting back to the affordability, you know, who would be responsible for that, and, you know, working out, having that as part of our plan. And then one other thing I wanted to say, and again, just to give you some specifics with the Disability Commission, excuse me, another thing is curb cuts are a huge issue. And curb cuts, again, if you think of curb cuts, it's a universal design. It's for people with pushing baby carriages. It could be somebody pushing the groceries. It could be whatever it might be, people that just can't go up a step. So I know DPW has been doing it. We are doing it. But again, that's another thing that's huge that's lacking. And that's going to be a never-ending, constant thing that needs to be done. So, and again, we'll share with you some of what our needs are. But again, a lot of the needs from one board will overlap with other boards and other needs. So it might be helpful somehow how you could do that where, like they were saying, prioritize, and you know, you'll see probably a lot of overlap. So.
Right. All right. Can we pass it down to Maureen, please?
Hi, Maureen Dunn, speaking to the resident. I just want to, I guess, follow up, because I think everyone who just spoke on housing has raised really good issues, so I'm going to kind of jump from one point to another following it. One of my concerns, because I've lived in other parts of the country, and you know, kind of look at Waltham, which has handled a lot of the roads extremely well. Okay. Framingham owner-occupied versus rental property. We only afford, only 54% of our housing is owner-occupied now. Okay. So when we talk about more rental housing, you have to realize that may well push us into a much more transient community, and we really need to think of that. Okay. I live, I'm in District 4, which includes Charles Will, and you can tell right away, often walking down the street, which properties owner-occupied and which isn't, okay? And that affects what people see when they come to decide whether to live in Framingham. So, I have to tell you, I'm in favor of more owner-occupied. But, okay, so something to think about. We're already, the community in Greater Metro West has the most rental, highest percentage of rental property, okay? And we're almost at the, what we call the tip-over point. When we talk about being on Route 9, and I think that's a good issue, I also think the accessibility issue, yes, those condos and apartments are older, but they could certainly probably use a tax incentive to upgrade the existing housing stock. You don't have to keep that in a less, I guess, less decent condition, although most of the ones I've seen have been upgraded by their owners, but you can have tax incentives to allow current multifamily property to upgrade it. And if you're a disabled, and I share with Karen, my husband walks with crutches, he is not going to walk more than a block or two. So it's nice to think about being downtown, but being in a building with an elevator or on Route 9 with a bus that comes back every hour to take you downtown, okay, that's handicapped accessible, that makes use of your current building, upgraded, and you know, services a whole range of people, single professionals and whoever else wants to live there. I get very frustrated when I see new housing going in for over 55, it's townhouses. There's absolutely no thought that most people who are aging need one floor, period. And yet we are allowing this happen over and over again. I'm not sure where that's coming from. The illegal boarding houses are an issue. Okay. We had a famous one in Connecticut that with 19 people living in it, okay? It was shut down by the fire department. They have been cut up to become a rabbit warden. Extremely unsafe. But also over this, as we talk about this related economic development, we have wonderful R1 neighborhoods. Throughout town, they abut commercial areas. We do not want to see any more spot zoning, abrupt, straight up buildings, across the street at intersections with R1 houses. I think we got to get serious about preserving the neighborhoods we've got, because that's what's really under stress, in my opinion, as a resident. Grace knows the answer to this. As we talk about aging, one thing I've heard a number, and I think Grace even has a height, what is the wait list for senior housing? People who, because of a heart attack, because of a sudden disability, cannot stay in their house and have been lifelong residents. What is the wait list to get in free maintenance of senior housing? And, and I think that gets what I was talking about. Do we need it? How urgent is that? And I would just through the chair ask if you could just ask her, what is the wait list currently?
It's 7 years to get into Framingham Senior Housing.
Wow.
At the Callahan Center, our social services staff encountered several people this past summer who needed emergency housing or they would have been homeless. Even though they got placed on the emergency housing list, it took 6 months before they could get in. And that's what helps people get up in the list on Framingham Housing is if you have veteran status or if you would otherwise be homeless and have been a resident here in Framingham for at least 5 years. So all these other people who have lived here 30, 40 years, but those are the conditions they're facing, they're not going to get into housing for the most part.
Thank you.
Hold
on 1 second. I just want to make sure everybody hears you.
Okay. I would just say, absolutely, that this is a current crisis and an impending one. You know, any strategic plan does not build in more senior housing. I think the ball has gotten dropped right there. That would be all of you, I hate to tell you. 28% of the Framingham population is currently over 55. Okay. So you're talking in the tens of thousands. And the pipeline is still coming.
She said 28.
And Framingham has more affordable housing for seniors than any of the other neighboring towns. And it still is.
It's not enough.
It also needs more supportive services for housing. The housing staff right now are stretched to their limits, trying to help people who have other issues, like mental health issues or substance abuse issues. These people need additional hand-holding just to get through their days, and that stretches the Framingham housing staff to their limits. So not only more housing, but more supports for additional staff to assist people who need that extra help.
Yes.
So I'm just going to echo everything. One of the reasons why I bought Framingham was I like the single-family home neighborhood, and that's what I'd like to see continue for my kids and have them grow up in. But my fear is, I grew up outside of New York City, so I watched as the neighborhoods all turned into these massive apartment buildings that were half full, half empty, but developers like to build them because they make a lot of money on them. The people in them don't stay in the neighborhood. They just come, stay there, and then move to someplace where they can buy a single-family home somewhere. So you're a stepping stone in the community. You're not actually building a community anymore. And I kind of see that coming to Framingham, where we're building a lot of apartment buildings, don't have necessarily a plan for where the next apartment house is going, but we're going to build more of them because they make economic sense right now. Who knows, 10 years from now, what it will look like. So, just in favor of something.
I have a little bit of a different perspective because increasingly our households are made up of one and two people. If you go back to statistics of not just the country, the state, the city, you'll find that most of our households are increasingly one in two people per household. And so what you're finding is there are people who are overhoused and would like to stay in the community but don't really have an alternative. It's just very expensive. Like did you mention the over 55 housing in three-story condos is just absurd for someone, because probably typically the people moving into those are at least in their 60s or 70s, and people just sort of turn a blind eye to the fact that they're just one accident or one medical event away from not even being able to use their own house. But one thing that I'm thinking of, we do need not necessarily apartments. It would be nice if there were condominiums in this community where people who are currently in single family housing but want to remain in Framingham and downsize, that there would be some options. I mean, I know that under zoning, you can't differentiate owner-occupied versus renter-occupied, but it would be nice if the community or, you know, had some kind of incentive or reached out to, you know, an organization or, you know, a developer who would build condominiums in apartment buildings. And they could be, you know, at a nice level in a nice area, but just to give people options, because when, you know, older adults move in there, as well as, you know, young professionals who only need a one or a two bedroom or a one bedroom and a den, it actually will open up the housing stock to allow younger families to move into a single family. And the problem is that the housing costs and rental costs are just going up so extraordinarily because of the lack of units in our communities.
Before we run out of time here, I do want to just touch upon to see if there's any feedback we have for municipal services, things that our municipal government provides to us as residents. And some of this may tie into, I mean, we've heard we need, you know, more help with housing staff and things of that nature for mental health issues and things of that. Are there other things that the city could provide as a benefit to residents and as a help to residents that might come from that? Yeah. Yes. Who? I don't know who is.
I think it would be helpful if the city had a social worker. We are such an enormous city. I mean, I worked for a time in the town of Sudbury, and they had a social worker who was available to at least direct people to the proper resources in the community. Oftentimes, people in this community can't get what they want because they don't know where to go. So if there was, you know, someone in the community who had those skills, who could at least direct people to the Callahan Center, to, you know, to mental health, to health, you know. So in other words, there's no central place for someone to go and get that kind of information. Not that I'm aware of anyway, maybe I'm wrong, but it just seems that something like that might be.
Just to answer your question, we do have a social worker that works for the fire department. That is where she's stationed. That's Kelly Haggerty is a social worker who works with the fire department.
To answer Karen's question about what Kelly Haggerty does, her focus has been a lot on helping veterans and people who are dealing with hoarding issues, but she runs the gamut, and she is able to, when people are 60 and older, she identifies for them to contact our staff at the Callahan Center to assist them. But as Karen's pointing out, there are people of all ages that need that kind of assistance, and I'm not sure how many people know that Kelly is available. So a lot of it is spreading the word about all of the resources that people do have at their disposal so that they know to take advantage of them.
Yes, and thank you for continuing to flesh that out. I just wanted to say that there is one. We don't know, a lot of people don't know about it, and you know, everything that was just said.
Mr. Desolet.
Yeah, Framingham had a human services person at one time, and the position was eliminated, but it was a person who was generally available for information and referral to the general population, and I think it was a very valuable position, and it was sad when we lost it. The recommendation, I think, is thoughtful. There are so many avenues to explore if you're looking for help. Sometimes it can be overwhelming, so someone who's well-versed in the universe of what's out there to help people would be beneficial to the community, I think. Thanks.
Really quick, I just wanted to say that I actually think that services, as far as I'm concerned, are very good. And one of the things that I was worried about switching from town to city is that they drop. But I haven't seen anything. I've used, you know, multiple departments, and I've always had very good luck and success. So it's something that I think has been a strong point so far. So I would just like to see that continue, I guess. Sure, it stays
out.
Great.
As the city becomes more populous, more and more difficult problems will come to the city as well. Right now, we have a tremendously understaffed police department. We've had to hire private security details, police details for downtown because of a vacancy problem, mental health issues, and substance abuse problems. And there's no balance as to what departments get what money for what kind of problems. The health department is not getting an adequate amount of money to match the need. But that's a short-term thing. Hopefully these problems will go away, but maybe they won't. Maybe it'll become more dire in the future. And there's no mechanism in place to prioritize that our government officials utilize. They tend to just look at one department and say, okay, we're going to give you 3% more than we gave you last year, and the school department maybe we'll give you 6%. And everybody else will get what they get, and nobody's having a conversation that the public can see and understand as to why some department will get more money over another department. We have all this news in our newspapers about terrible conditions relative to public health and public safety. I don't know if that's the gist of what it is that was part of your one of your eight items. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, I think so.
Not
I mean,
really police yet. That's next week. Public safety.
Yeah, public safety is more probably next week. On the 7th, when we meet at the high school. But, you know, it is somewhat part of municipal services and the municipal government structure and things of that nature.
We just don't have a way of moving revenue to urgent problems. If you really look at the police situation, you call, well, we get there when we can, we're doing everything we can. Somebody at the other end is having a real problem, but they can only deal with their emergency calls. And they don't have enough police to deal with the emergency calls. So a woman is walking down the street with her child, and cars are racing by, cut through streets, putting her street and her neighbors in danger. They just can't get to it, and they can't get to our downtown emergency. So that's all I'm saying. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair? No.
Yes, Mr. Akhtar.
Yeah. I just wanted to follow up on the question that was, or concern that was raised about, you know, if there's a need, who do we call? There's nobody to kind of direct people to the right resources. The city has hired what they call a citizen participation.
You may need to get.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. The city has now a citizen participation officer. And I have talked to her many times, and it is my understanding that she gets a lot of calls from various folks to say, who are the right people to get in touch with? Who do I contact? Can you help? And it is my understanding that she is, in fact, providing those folks the right contacts and the right people to get in touch with. It's a good resource. If people are not aware of that, I think we should make use of that resource.
Maureen, did you have something else?
Can I say something?
Yep, sure. Sorry, I didn't see who the microphone was.
No, that's okay. That's okay. But yeah, no, we work with Lala, and she's very helpful. She puts a lot of people in touch with us when they have any disability or access questions, so that's been working pretty well. I think part of it is, again, just letting people know that she is there and that I think that is part of her role. And then the other thing, and I'm not sure exactly when this person will start, but we will be having a diversity inclusion officer. So I don't know exactly the role that person will play, but I'm sure with some of the issues, that might even help with that. So, you know, but it's a matter of people knowing about these positions that we currently have and what it is that they do and, you know, letting the community know. So maybe that's even something for you guys to recommend that, you know, get that word out somehow of the people that do already provide some of this, because it does seem like there is no one no central person to contact. And like we had talked about a human services person, we had had that a while ago. So I think maybe some of these people are providing some of those services that the human services person provided. I don't know, but and then of course then the other thing that I wanted to bring up, this was put in the charter, that one of the recommendations that was made, and of course, you know, this is, again, we're talking about positions in municipal, an ADA compliance officer. So that's something the Disability Commission has actually been wanting for a long, long time. The ADA was 29 years this past July 26th. It was passed 29 years ago. So next year it'll be 30 years old. And it's just amazing because in 30 years we've come a long way, but in another way we haven't. And it's because of all these little pieces of who's overseeing, who's making sure the curb cuts and that's really the Disability Commission, the Access Compliance Officer that currently is with the Building Department, and then Thatcher Keyser, who is the COO, but he's also the ADA coordinator. But you know, he wears many hats and he's got a lot to do. So, you know, and this is the frustrating part from our perspective. And again, you know, and they all do overlap in some ways, but we'll hear from the general community about curb cuts or a lack of curb cuts or whatever it might be, or access, getting into a building or not knowing that something's accessible. So this, or if it is accessible, and this is again, a need right now that's being unmet. And that's something, again, that you know the Commission's been working with the administration on, and hopefully one day we will be able to have someone that strictly oversees, because when we talk about the ADA, we're talking about compliance, and that the city is required to be in compliance, and there's five different titles under the ADA that have to be in compliance. So, There's a lot with everything, and part of that, under that does come housing as well, and employment, and many different things. So, thank you.
If you'll pass it down to Maureen, she didn't get a chance to finish.
Hi, I just had a couple points. I just realized that next week I won't get into why we need more parks and splash parks, etc. I did want to say something in terms of municipal, because DPW would be under this, and it doesn't have a little separate heading. And I just want to say, as we think green and we want people walking, we have got to have sidewalks. A good portion of this town is narrow roads with people on foot. Okay. In District 4, we are finally getting some of our worst intersections. And I just want to compliment the DPW. They held hearings in neighborhoods. Oakland Path, Concord Street going up, down, I'm sure you're familiar with Beacon. But as we put in sidewalks, we see increased foot traffic. I see increased foot traffic. Where I live is the high school south walking route, also from McCalla. And the more we can put people on their feet safely, and that's the piece that's been missing. We, you know, buildings are going up, especially on the secondary, not on the primary road, but on the secondary. They don't have full sidewalks. They should be sidewalks from one intersection all the way to the other. And this, I think, should be an absolute priority, because the more you can have people on a sidewalk, the less you have a car. And so sidewalks, crosswalks, and a piece of this at our major intersections, which I think will be under transportation, we have gridlock. And I have photos on my phone of gridlock at 126 every 30. Cars entering the intersection when it was clear they would not go through it and completely blocking the cross traffic. Now, my husband's life was saved with paramedics getting him through to Metro West Hospital to have stents put in 2013. Saved his life. But they also did it in 8 minutes. Okay. The day I saw it in a rainstorm, no one was going to be getting to Metro West Hospital in 8 minutes. They didn't have a prayer of making it. And I think we need to address that now. I don't care if you put grids around, take a camera and everyone that's parked in there gets their $200 ticket, but there's no enforcement. But other communities, if you go, you know, into Brookline stuff, they're gridding them, they have a camera, you sit there and block it in both directions, ticket comes in the mail. And I just think this is on behalf of residents, the people who live here. And for often in these situations, it's the back burner. And I think pushing the population, especially on traffic, has had it.
Since you did ask about municipal services, I will selfishly speak on behalf of my peeps.
Thank you. Thank you.
We regularly are at capacity at the center. We have between 100 and more than 200 people per day coming to the center. We have fewer than 100 parking spaces. There is no way for us to expand our lot because we are bounded by the Sudbury River and a residential street on the other side. So if we are recognizing the fact that more than 25% of the population is now 55, a good number of those people will continue to stay in the community and will want something like a senior center. So I think if we're looking 10 years down the road, we really need to be considering, is there another location, either that we have a larger center with more parking, or do we have a satellite location? Cambridge has 3 senior centers in their community. So just something to consider. Also, you know, our staff regularly will park over at Outage Field and walk back to the center for their jobs because they realize many of our people who come for our programs, that's not as easy for them to make that quarter mile walk. So, you know, lots to keep in mind there.
Thank you.
Before we close out, I just want to make sure I say something more about affordability. And it ties into government structure as well. No city employee or elected or appointed official has ever fundamentally analyzed affordability. And if you look at our school committee and our city council and their subcommittees, they don't have the capacity or the desire to look at that either. As was mentioned earlier about the more traditional finance committee, a finance committee perhaps as I wanted that was elected, that had the same standing as the city council and the school committee. Nobody is properly addressing affordability. They're in their silo, they're looking at their own situation, bringing their own experience as to how to assess these things before them. And there's no standardized analysis, return on investment, or any way to evaluate the proposals and projects that these departments are working on. And they are driving up budgets much higher than we can afford, which is the affordability, because they're not properly structured or disciplined, and there's nobody to tell them that they should be, and especially the mayor and the executive office is in no better shape than any other part of the government. So our structure is in jeopardy, our affordability is in jeopardy. What was mentioned earlier about the number of housing units that are rentals versus how many are live-in and full-time residence owners, is that ratio is out of proportion, and it's not where things need to be. Again, I'm at a loss to tell you how to deal with these things because it's really not like a 10-year plan. But all these things and all these concerns have to get streamlined into whatever it is you're proposing so that you don't omit serious flaws and voids in our good governance requirement, which is part of everything else we'll do. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any other committee members have anything, any comments they want to make or anything? Anyone else? All right. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. I think as a committee, I can speak for the committee, we really appreciate your feedback. There were actually lots of great ideas that were presented tonight, and we really appreciate that. And I'm sure that we will... I would think, and at least I will, as the chair, be following up with a number of you. So expect a phone call or an email from me, because I would love to talk to you more about some of these issues. But I do think that talking to more of the commissions and the boards and the chairs and things of that nature is a very good recommendation to figure out a way to get some of that feedback. I will just end by saying we do have another one of these meetings coming up on Monday, October 7th at the auditorium at the high school. We thought we'd move around a little bit and get out of the big building downtown. And there we'll be, you know, focusing more on education, public safety, the environment, some things of that nature. So we invite you guys to come back to there. Please spread the word. And also tomorrow night here in this room, the mayor's office is having that presentation on the infrastructure of Framingham. So I hope you guys can come out to that, because that kind of plays a part into what we're dealing with as well. And what to see.
What time?
I think it's at 7. I believe it's at 7 tomorrow. But it's going to be in this right here where we are now. So I would encourage you guys to come out and hear that presentation as well. I'm very interested in it because I think some of that will determine how we're able to present some services in the future for Framingham. So I think that's, you know, very important. But please spread the word to your neighbors, your friends, your boards, your commissions to come talk to us, because we would love to hear and get more recommendations.
Is there a way to get the contact information about this board, your individual emails, or board group email?
We do have individual emails. I know at one point they were supposed to be put up on the website. I haven't seen them, so that's something we have to do. You can contact me as the chair. I'm happy to give you my email for this. It's just robert.case.sifoc. So that's S-I-F-O-C. O-C, yes. So robert.case.sifoc@gmail.com. So I'm happy to you know, respond to anything and have any questions. Yes, Murray?
I think we need to have something up on the website.
Yep.
I mean, I showed up there barely doing. I was expecting something completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I happened to see the Facebook this morning, and I didn't even understand what the initial stood for.
Okay.
But I just saw it had to do with housing. So. But I think it would be helpful if you had sort of more outreach into the community, whether it's sending emails to organizations and boards in the community, you know, but something more, and then maybe say what all those initials stand for.
Strategic Initiatives and Financial Oversight Committee. So it's a little bit of a tongue twister. Yes, Grace, I'll let you have the final word.
Speaking for my people.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank all of you for volunteering. Oh. We appreciate all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone.
Signing off from Nibbitt Hall. Good night and good luck.